of you have been to a magic show? I'd say a good majority of us probably been to a lot of magic shows. I both like these, and they also irritate me a little bit. I like them because they're very entertaining. It irritates me because I know what I'm seeing is a trick. I just can't figure it out, what it is that they're doing. And the more I see them, the more I try to watch and just kind of I check out their hands and I see, okay, what are they doing? How is this working? And I can't figure it out. And part of me just says, keep looking harder. The other part of me says, just give up and enjoy the show. I know my other option isn't really one if I just walk up to them and say, how'd you do that? And they're not going to tell me. Or even worse, they will give me an answer that's nowhere near the truth. Magicians. There's actually a TV show that's on where up-and-coming magicians try to perform their tricks in front of a couple of veteran magicians. And the veteran magicians have to figure out how did they do this. And they don't try to recreate the trick. They actually talk to them while a whole crowd is around them and while people are watching on TV. But they talk to them in such a way that we have no idea what they're saying. They understand what they're saying to each other, but we don't know. They're speaking to each other in a code. They have this trick of sleight of hand. They have this code, this way of talking to each other. And here's what's even more fascinating. Going back to the first century, people who acted most like magicians back in the first century were not people you would expect. The people who acted most like magicians back then were doctors. Sleight of hand, speaking in codes. You see, the idea that we live in a broken world that makes us susceptible to sickness and disease and death was known, but it wasn't really commonly held. More and more, the belief was that people were sick because the gods were angry with them, or because someone had cast a spell or put a curse on them. And this was the reason why doctors were more like magicians than physicians. So it happens, which I get cute with my words. Doctors were more like magicians than physicians. And this was the case in Israel. This was the case in Rome. This was all over the place. It would be this way for at least another couple centuries. And so that's why it's not uncommon for people when they're sick to come to a religious leader, to come to a spiritual leader like Jesus for healing, because they felt they were tied together. One such event, one such time that this takes place is in our passage today, Mark chapter 5, verse 21. You don't mind turning there right now. You can follow along with your finger as I preach this morning. Jesus has just crisscrossed the Sea of Galilee. Remember, he tells the disciples, hey, let's get in a boat and cross the sea. The big storm happens. Some of these men were fishermen, fearing for their lives. This must have been a huge storm. Jesus calms the storm, which probably freaks the disciples out even more at that point. He crosses the sea. He meets a man who has a legion of demons inside of him. And Jesus casts those demons out into a herd of pigs, who then subsequently run into the river or the sea, which freaks out the locals. And they ask Jesus, please, please leave. Please, please go back to wherever you came from. So Jesus and the disciples get back into their boat, and they come back to more familiar territory. We see it's familiar territory because there's a crowd that's waiting for them. Jesus has been gaining a reputation in this area. That's what happens when you heal a leper, when you heal a paralytic, when you heal a demon-possessed people and people who are sick. He is gaining a reputation. And this crowd is coming around Jesus. And there's one person in particular in this crowd who also has taken notice of this. His name is Jairus. And Jairus is we translate it as a synagogue ruler. It's kind of the best we can do with the pairing of the words. the best way to put it is he's the guy who is in charge of the synagogue. He's not the guy who teaches. Those are the local teachers. Teachers would go around from town to town. He would schedule these guys and give them places to stay while they're in town. That was one thing that he did. He also took care of the synagogue. He would prepare the services. He prepared the Sabbath meetings. He would prepare the feasts when they came up. As I mentioned, he'd take care of the building. He was also most likely the guy who built the building. Not so much physically, but he gave the financial support for this building to be built. He's a pretty big guy in the community. He's a pretty well-known guy. People would be grateful for a guy like Jairus. Jairus has a problem, though. His daughter is sick, and it's not looking good for her. Jairus finally makes his way through the crowd, and he sees Jesus. And he bends down before Jesus. Maybe he's trying to persuade Jesus to come with him to do what he wants him to do. Maybe for the first time in a very long time, he's experiencing hope. And that hope is in the form of Jesus. And bows down before him. And it says in verse 23, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." Now, as I mentioned, Jairus would be a very important person in the community. There are people who could point to Jairus and say, he is very responsible for the deepening of my faith, since he has such an important role in what goes on in the local synagogue. Jewish teachers would be very happy for a guy like Jairus. Jesus' teachers should be very happy with a guy like Jairus. It would be no surprise at all to see Jesus go along with Jairus to say, yes, I will go ahead and do this. No surprise at all. But what happens next is surprising. Jesus goes along with Jairus, and so does the crowd. And your translations might say they thronged about. They might say that they pressed in. The actual Greek is crushed with. The crowd's crushed with Jesus. I don't know how many of you were at Jubilee Day around noon or so. You might have experienced that same crushed with type experience if you were there. People are packed in around him. And also in this crowd is another person who's seeking healing. Here's a woman. We don't know her name, but we know a lot about what's going on with her. She has been bleeding for 12 years, hemorrhaging for 12 years. Can you imagine what that would be like? Can you imagine that? Now place yourself in the first century in the Middle East and imagine that. What kind of cost that would have for her? I guarantee you she's not married, not with that sickness. On top of that, she's unclean. She's unclean. Anything she touches is unclean. Anyone who touches what she touches is unclean. And she does not give up, though. That's what I love about her. She keeps trying to find ways. She goes to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor searching for healing. And spends every penny that she has. She spends every penny that she has. Not every penny that her husband has or that her family has or that her parents have. This is how we know she's alone. She spends every penny that she has trying to get well. Not only to no avail, but it only makes her worse in the end. Again, doctors more like magicians than physicians back in this time period. There's no guarantee of help. She hears reports about Jesus. In Mark's gospel, she would have heard about the paralytic. She would have heard about many people being healed, the leper being healed. She as well sees hope. She says, if only I can just touch his garments, I would be healed. And she sneaks her way through the crowd. Very dangerous thing for an unclean woman to do this if she got caught doing this. Sneaks her way through, comes up behind Jesus, reaches around and touches him. And instantly, she is healed. Now imagine how she would feel after that. Instantly, she is healed. And all of a sudden, Jesus starts acting funny. You know, the disciples notice he's no longer walking towards Jairus' house. He just stops, and he starts looking around. He knows he just healed someone, and he wasn't very active in this healing. And he needs to see this person. And remember how I said the crowds are crushed in around him. And Jesus says, someone has touched my garments. I don't know if, I hope he said it with a smirk on his face. Someone has touched my garments. You know, I went to a high school of 1,400 people. I know that's not too big for what's around here. I don't know about your high schools here, but we only had one entrance, one main entrance. All the buses came to this one entrance. So 3 o'clock hits, and you have 1,000 students all pouring out towards one entrance. We had different hallways, but I mean, you have 1,000 kids all chomping at the bit to get out, and you're going to get packed in. You're going to get touched. You're going to get pushed. You're going to get shoved. It's not a place to be if you don't like having physical contact with people. So it's kind of in the midst of something like this that Jesus says, someone just touched me. The funny thing is there are people probably touching Jesus at the moment that he says, someone has just touched my garments. And we're very careful to know all the times that Jesus seems to be frustrated with his disciples. We tend to forget the times the disciples are frustrated with Jesus. Because the disciples are going, you're kidding me, right? You're asking this question, who just touched me? I think you're being touched right now by people. What do you mean by this? And Jesus isn't really paying attention to them. He just keeps looking for this woman. Where is she? Or where is this person? And the woman realizes that Jesus is looking for her. And for whatever reason, she decides that she needs to go back to Jesus. Maybe she knows that he really knows. Maybe she knows that he's going to find her one way or another. And she comes back to him trembling. See, what she did wasn't exactly kosher. Wasn't exactly acceptable. A woman touching a man in public. A woman touching a religious leader in public. A single woman touching a religious leader in public. An unclean woman. Doing this. Most Jewish teachers at the time would not find this acceptable. And here she touches someone who took away her sickness. What is he going to do? Is he going to give it back to me? Something worse. She falls at his feet just like Jairus does. Explains to him the whole story, the whole truth. Jesus' response to her is totally unlike what she expected. Daughter, speaks to her gently, speaks to her with respect. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed. Can you imagine what her story would sound like if Jesus didn't look for her? You know, she sees an old friend from 12 years ago. The friend says, hey, where you been? I haven't seen you in such a long time. And she would say, oh, I had this bleeding disorder. I was unclean for the past 12 years. And a friend might say, whoa, are you unclean now? No. I mean, I've been to many doctors trying to figure this out. And then I heard about this Jesus. I don't know if you heard of him, but he's been going around healing people. And I decided, if I would go into this crowd that was around him, if I would find my way to him, if I would reach out my hand and touch his garment, I think I'd be healed. And I did that. And I got healed. Who's the hero in that story? It's kind of her. You know, it's her plan, her idea. She's the one who goes out and does it. I mean, it's all on her. And possibly on Jesus' garments, like they're special or something, like they're magical. Because Jesus seeks her out, there's more to the story than that. Because Jesus seeks her out, now the focus is on Jesus. Because he says to her, your faith has healed her. her faith in Jesus, his healer, the fact that she was looking towards him, dependent on him. You were in need, you depended on me. That is what brought you healing. That changes the perspective for her. And she also goes from knowing about Jesus and not even interacting from him to actually getting to experience a bit of Jesus himself. While he's still explaining this to her, people come running out of Jairus' house. It's the last thing that Jairus ever wanted to see. You see, when you had a family member who was sick near death, it was very common to have professional mourners in your house, ready to start performing as soon as the person died. People would start performing, and then people would run out and find the loved ones of the person who passed and notify them. So people come running out towards Jairus. And they say to him, that his daughter's dead. Do not disturb Jesus any longer. What if? What if? What if? What if? We can start playing the what if game when we think of things that could have been prevented. What if Jairus didn't wait so long to go find Jesus? What if Jairus had heard about Jesus earlier? What if Jesus never went on the boat? What if this woman didn't distract Jesus as far as he may have been concerned? What if she had just waited until after Jesus healed his daughter? I think we can play that what if game as well. And it can haunt us for a very long time. It can ruin our lives, this what if game. I think Jesus' words to Jairus are very applicable to us as we struggle with this. Jesus ignores what Jairus is told and says, do not fear, only believe. He can say the same thing to us. Do not fear, trust me. Trust me. You know, a phrase like this in the Bible, only do not fear, only believe. The way that we understand belief and faith in our culture today, it's almost like it's this well-wishing, this only have happy thoughts. You know, just have happy thoughts and everything will be okay. That's the way we kind of understand faith and belief these days. You see like these Hallmark movies where people will reject all the evidence, all the knowledge that they should trust in something, and they just go back to their happy thoughts. And because they have their happy thoughts, they kind of save themselves and have a happy ending and all this. That's not what the Bible talks about when it talks about belief, when it talks about faith. Words translated as belief and faith also mean trust. To believe, to have faith, is to trust or to depend on. And rarely, if ever, in the Bible do you hear about someone being asked to believe or have faith without evidence, without some sort of reason to believe. Here, Jairus has two people. He has a daughter who has died. And there is a man willing to help, who Jairus knows has healed the paralytic, who's healed the leper, who's healed many, who's removed demons. He just saw Jesus heal a woman hemorrhaging blood. He has a lot of evidence for Jesus. When Jesus says, trust me, he has a lot of evidence to actually listen and trust Jesus. Something we sometimes forget. Jesus sheds the crowd, only bringing along three of his disciples and Jairus. They come into the house and it's noisy, it's loud. The professional mourners are playing. What this was, in its most simplest of cases, you would have someone, you'd have a couple people playing a flute, you'd have a woman singing a dirge, a sad song. It's kind of helping the loved ones mourn in this case. For someone like Jairus, this would have been huge. And Jesus, again, says something kind of confusing. He tells them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." These are professional mourners, by the way. These are people, this is what they do for a living. They know a dead body when they see one. What Jesus is doing is he's saying, you don't need to be doing this. The mourning does not have to start because she is going to be back. She is going to be raised. But he says it in such a way that it makes them laugh. I don't know if that's a good for someone's job history, if they're a professional mourner, that they're laughing in the presence of a dead body. Probably not, but this is how funny it sounded to them, that they kind of lose their professionalism and just break and start laughing. Jesus pushes them out of the room, and now we're back to just Jesus, the parents, a couple of his disciples, and the dead girl. And Jesus goes to the dead girl, takes her by the hand. This isn't a open up Lazarus' grave and stand outside and say, "Lazarus, come forth." This is a lot more gentle. He takes her by the hand and says, "Little girl, arise." Speaks to her in Aramaic. Why is that important to know that he speaks to her in Aramaic? Because it goes back to the doctor practices of the day. The healing power was not in his garments. It was not in his body. This, if I just touch Jesus, I'll be healed. The healing power is in Jesus himself. The healing power is not in some sleight of hand. It's not in some magical code. It's not in some elaborate way of speaking in a gibberish language. Jesus speaks to her in a common language. He can, because the healing comes through him. Pretty much the way he's speaking to her is kind of like saying, "Hey, little girl, sweetie, it's time to wake up." Instantly, she's up. Jesus says a couple things to the parents. Everyone's overcome with amazement. There's this concept of, if I believe, then I shouldn't be amazed. No, you can believe and still be pretty amazed at what can happen. That's just something to keep in note there. He tells them two other things. He tells them to give her something to eat. Most sophisticated medical practices of the time, if they were aware of them, would say, let the body heal itself. Even to the point of don't give the sick person food, because that would get in the way of the body healing itself. So this would be a girl who's pretty hungry at this point. And then he also strictly charges them that no one should know about this. That's pretty strange. No one should know about this. I mean, what does that mean? Someone knocks on the door of Jairus' house and Jairus goes, "Wife, act sad. Girl, act dead. No one can know about this." I'm a little confused, I have to admit, at that. I know that this is mentioned a few times in the book of Mark. No one can know about this. A couple things that come to my mind. One is that if people start knowing about this, people aren't truly going to understand who Jesus is until his mission is complete. They might just see him as a healer, as a teacher. They might roll him up with all the other tricksters. In a way, not until his mission is complete will people fully understand Jesus. Even his disciples don't even fully understand Jesus. Also in Mark 1, it's the first time that Jesus tells someone he heals not to tell anyone. And what does the guy do? He tells people right away. And it creates this commotion, this crowd that makes it hard for him to do ministry. So Jesus charges them not to tell anyone about this. How they settle the fact that their daughter is now alive and people know that she died? I don't know. Maybe it's just keep him out of it. I'm sure they're just happy rejoicing that their daughter's alive. What I find, or what is really striking about this story, is that these two people could not be more opposites, Jairus and the bleeding woman. I mean, first of all, he's a man, she's a woman. And I'm not being nitpicky here. That mattered a lot back in the first century Palestine time. If you were a woman, you were not going to gain much social status. It's the way it was. Doesn't mean if you're a guy, you're automatically guaranteed it. It just means if you're a woman, you're not going to have it. Especially, as I said before, if you're a single woman. Especially, as I said before, if you're an unclean woman. Here is Jairus. He is socially acceptable in every way. She is an outcast. He is a religious influence in the community. She is unclean. You can't get more different than that. He has a lot of money. She has not a penny to her name. He publicly goes to Jesus. She does it in secret. He bows down before Jesus, and she sneaks a touch. Who they are, the labels that are put on them, how they act towards him are totally different. And yet they both receive the healing they're looking for from Jesus. That's what's meant by a gospel without limits. The gospel is not limited by status, by where someone lives, by what they have, by skin color, by political party, by whatever it is that we divide people by. The gospel knows no limits in that way. The only limit to the gospel is faith. Will you turn towards Jesus? Will you turn to God? They both were in a desperate situation that had no hope without Christ. And they both placed their trust in Jesus. Another theme that runs through this story is this idea of being unclean. This bleeding woman is unclean. The dead girl is definitely unclean. Jesus has physical contact with both of them. So does that make him unclean? Depends. A couple ways of looking at that. At this point, I'll say yes. You see, there's a reason why Jesus is able to heal. As I mentioned before, we live in a broken world that allows us to be susceptible to sin, to death and disease and sickness. We live in a broken world because of sin. As Romans tells us, the wages of sin is death. Anything tied to it comes from sin. Anything tied to death comes from sin. It's why it is such a huge deal in the book of John when John sees Jesus and says, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Now, Jesus doesn't just grab all the sin in the world, roll it up in a little ball, and throw it up over his shoulder. He takes it upon himself. He takes your sin upon himself, my sin upon himself, anyone who places their trust in him, he takes your sin upon himself. He defeats the power of sin at the cross. And because of what he will do on the cross, he's able to remove the effects of sin on the sick. To look at it another way, her blood stopped because his blood flowed. She received life because he gave up his own. He receives our sin. He receives our guilt. We get his righteousness. We get his purity. When we place our faith in him. That is the only limitation. What that encourages us with is that we do not put limitations on others. We want to hang out with people who are like us. That's fine, but let's not make boogeymen out of everyone else. God is embracing those. Whether you are a rich, respectable man, you are still a sinner in need of a Savior. And whether you have the deepest, darkest past, you are not beyond the loving arms of the Savior. Let's not create borders that God is not creating. Reach out to a world that needs Him. And maybe this whole concept is new to you, the fact that Jesus is the one who takes away our sins, that we are people in desperate need, and that Jesus is the one we depend on for our salvation. If that's new to you, I encourage you, place your faith in Jesus today. Maybe it's so new to you, you still have questions, you still have wonders. You can come find me after the service. I'd love to talk with you, set up some time with you. Let's rejoice in what Christ has done for us.